to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
One, two, three, we have a quorum. Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Lathir?
Here.
Commissioner Longton?
Here.
Commissioner Gladue is absent. Commissioner Maselli?
Here.
Three present out of five. We have a quorum. Thank you very much. Are there any alterations to the agenda? Does anyone have any alterations to the agenda? Hearing none. Moving on, I'll entertain a motion to approve the regular meeting minutes of January 4th. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Say aye.
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 Any abstentions? Any opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Item F, communications pertaining specifically to matters which concern the commission. Does anyone have any communications to share? Hearing none. Item G, remark from the public regarding items on the agenda with a 3-minute limit. Are there any remarks from the public? Are there any remarks from the public? Third and final call, any remarks from the public? Hearing none, moving on to item H, executive session for personnel issues. I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Oh, you guys will step out?
Yeah, we step out.
Okay.
Okay, it is 6:30. We have returned from executive session. No votes were taken. And as a result of the discussion, I would entertain a motion to accept the changes we talked about in the job descriptions. And have them passed on to the town council for their thoughts and approval. Is there a motion?
There is a motion. There's a second.
There's a second. Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Rich? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any noes? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Item I, report from Operations Administration Division.
Good evening. This is Superintendent Albertson. I'm going to go through just some highlights of January's operations and administration for the plant and collection system. We have on staff now a collections operator, a lab operator, and we're advertising for a certified operator one for the wastewater group. We had a retiree. The lab operator, so now we've replaced that person, and we had a collections operator who had resigned, and we have a new collections operator, so we're moving forward. We've reviewed the budgets for the first 6 months of the fiscal year. We are well ahead of revenues for both sewer and water, so we're in good shape financially, both on the water and the sewer side. I want to remind the commission, all three labor contracts expire on June 30th of this year. So all three, the Teamsters, the ASME, and the MAME unions will be approaching the town for negotiations. We have been monitoring COVID in the influent, and for the last 4 weeks, we've seen a consistent drop, a significant drop in the virus, the COVID virus in the influent. We conserved energy quite well. In January of this year, we saw about a 9 to 10% drop in the amount of energy that we purchased, either through the fuel cell or from the street power, Eversource, and that results in about $5,000 in savings. I met with Rand Whitney last week, met with P&H Construction Phase one of the discharge line and recycle line repair has been completed. Phase two is paused due to weather concerns. They have 1,200 feet to go. And there will be a phase three, but no work will commence on phase three without the approval of the commission. And P&H Construction, as well as Rand Whitney, will approach the commission and have full disclosure about any additional repairs that are required. I wanted to remind the commission we have Wright Pierce, our WPCA engineer, under the item H, excuse me, under item J, no, K. It's going to be a report from the engineers. Thurlin Montgomery, the engineer from Wright Pierce, is going to be here to talk about our permit renewal. This is the federal permit, the NPDES permit, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit that is coming due in October of this year. So the way these federal permits work is you have to apply the permit renewal package 6 months prior to the expiration. So we're working on that. So we'll get that in April. He's also here to talk to us about the Stony Creek Bridge repair. And we're going out to bid soon for that. And then he did hand out a preliminary draft digester memorandum regarding the potential on-site solids handling and treatment. So we will get to him. And that's it from the superintendent.
Any questions for the superintendent?
Yeah, who's going to do the negotiation with for the contracts? Would that be the administrator or would that be the superintendent?
It would actually be the, it would be strictly the union with the mayor. So it'll be the union president and negotiating team and the representative from each of the unions, typically an attorney from the main office. And then on one side of the table, and then on the other side of the table is the mayor and the town attorney, labor attorney.
Okay, I have a comment regarding the negotiations. And from my experience on the town council, one thing that always bothered me as a town council member was when by the time, okay, all union contracts need to be approved by the town council. By the time it got to the town council, everything had already been decided, all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted, and basically the town council just asked to rubber stamp it. But that was the first time that we'd seen it. You know, I would make a request of the mayor for the town council to at least receive a heads up, you know, this is going to come up, you know, here are the issues that we talked about. These are the things that we decided. If possible, a markup, you know, so that the town councilors aren't caught flat-footed and say, you must approve this or go home. Because that's the way I felt all 6 years I was on the council. You know, I didn't have a say. You know, I just have to approve it. I'm supposed to approve it. If I don't, you know, I'm going to be blackballed. So, That's unfair to the town councilors, and I'm not even on the town council anymore. Yeah, but that was my experience, and I wanted to share that. So, if Mr. Mayor, if you could do something to address that, appreciate that.
The only thing I could say about that too is sometimes they don't like to let out to the general public or something where they are in negotiations, what's there before it's finalized. So I would think maybe tell the council, but tell the council not to take it all out there.
It can be it you know, a way that could be handled is a special meeting of the town council in executive session where everything is confidential,
right.
And that would be the only item on the agenda. That would work.
I think the executive session could come during a regular council meeting, but it would definitely be an executive session. Having been on the serving in the town council, I do remember times when we would go into executive session to discuss negotiations. So, yes.
But, you know, we always went into executive session for that. But our first view of it was when it was done. And I always felt cheated by that because I'm supposed to approve it.
This is Superintendent. I neglected to add three comments. We had some significant rain events in January. We had a 5-inch rain event, a 7-inch rain event, and a 4-inch rain event, which caused a hydraulic overloading of the plant, which caused some process control issues. Even though we don't have a combined system that is rainwater mixed with storm, mixed with sewage water, we still have a lot of inflow, that is rainwater that comes in to the system from the surface, and then infiltration, which is groundwater that goes into the collection system. But we've settled down now, and we've initiated a INI study, an inflow and infiltration study, to identify those areas that are recognized as being contributing to the worst case scenario. And one of them is in the manor for infiltration, that is groundwater getting into the system from broken pipes or bad joints. And then the worst inflow section that was identified is on 163 adjacent to Rand Whitney. And we have already investigated, we've walked that property a number of times, and we're going to start cameraing both of those. But on some good news, we made $22,000 in septage receiving in January, which is considerable for typically one of our lighter months. So we're very, very fortunate there.
Just a quick question for you. Are these the manholes?
Yep, those are two locations. The first one, that's got Maryland and Indiana Circle,
yep.
Those two runs are considered the worst for groundwater infiltration. And now is a good time to check those, particularly in the area, that pipe that goes through the field south of Oakdale School, because the water table is so ridiculously high. And then the next page is the worst case inflow, and that is adjacent to Rand Whitney on 163, and it's north of Robertson Road. And we've looked at those manholes, located all of them last week, and now we're going to pop them open and see if during rain events if we do have a lot of surface water entering those. And those are kind of low-hanging fruit.
Any questions for the superintendent?
Nope, good.
I'm good.
One last thing was we did present the DOT with reimbursement for the 37 manholes we repaired on 163, and they did give us $64,300 in reimbursement.
Was that the exact amount?
That was the exact amount, and that was extremely timely. And also the comment from the DOT was, good job. They were impressed with both the paving and the manhole repairs.
Okay. And moving on to item J, report from the mayor.
I just want to make everybody aware that we did initiate the initial talks with the AFSCME union today. They kind of a roundhouse discussion of what the needs were and what the concerns were. Effective next Monday, we'll be hiring the administrator after nearly five years, in the having it posted, and I'm sure we'll all agree that the candidate that was selected was the most qualified and had the most impressive resume in Ron McDaniel. And the That's all I got.
Questions for the mayor?
Okay, just one comment for the record. Mayor Ron McDaniel was not the only applicant. There was at least one other who was also interviewed. So that, you know, there were two interviewed applicants, and Mayor McDaniel was selected based upon qualifications. Okay. Item L, old business. We have none. Item M, new business.
Oh, we have to go back to item K, report from the engineers.
Oh, we skipped right over that. I'm sorry. Item K, thank you. Report from the engineers.
Guys almost got away free.
Yeah. We would have had to get coffee. So,
Want to introduce Thurlin Montgomery is an engineer from Wright Pierce. And Wright Pierce is the WPCA engineer. I've been here for 5.5 years. I think Thurlin was the first person I met outside of the plant. Helped us steward through the $4.5 million grant. We had worked with Thurlin on the diffuser projects and other projects, chlorine disinfection. We have a good relationship with them. He's here to talk, as I indicated, about three things: the permit renewal, the aerobic digester, and the bridge project. I brought full-scale plans of the bridge project. Not that everybody's going to have time to review those, but he can answer some questions you might have.
Hello, my name is Thurlin Montgomery from Wright Pierce. Been with Wright Pierce for almost 10 years now. I think I recognize everybody. I've been here a couple times, except for the new mayor. I've got three things I want to talk to you about. I guess I'll start with the Stony Brook project. This came up several months ago. We do have the final design package ready to go. The drawings are there. If you guys want to have me put drawings on a flash drive or send you emails of the set, I can certainly do that. But yes, we're ready to go to bid on this. So I'm just kind of looking to get your okay on that, and then we can establish the bid dates. We can establish when it goes out to advertisement. We're going to want at least 30 days for the contractors to provide a bid package. And then after that, we can review the bids and make a selection. But in essence, we're going to, the approach, just to recap, the approach was to rehab the existing bridge, keep the existing piping in place. All the flows should not be interrupted, but basically replace the sections that really need to be replaced, and then recoat the entire new, recoat the entire structure with a new protective coating in the end. So that was the general approach. So once again, yeah, we're ready to go out to bid. So I know it was kind of on a critical path several months ago. So any questions?
None for me.
No, it seems pretty much cut and dry with this.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
Okay. The permit renewal. The permit. MPDES permit for the discharge from the plant, that's up for renewal. I'm not sure if you ever got the approval from the last one, but it takes a while for the state to approve these things. But yes, it's up for renewal. It is due in April. It's something that we've worked on in the past. We did some permit modifications regarding Rand Whitney BOD levels. We did do the last permit renewal 5 years ago. So I was going to provide Derek a task order if it's acceptable to work on the permit renewal for this coming year.
I want to add, it's like a study in statistics. They look at your 2 years data and what your typical contaminant levels are coming in and going out. And we're very fortunate where we perform well as a treatment plant, but there's always this chance that the Region 1 EPA may make the effluent standards more stringent. And it's an outside chance, but, you know, you always wonder. For example, the percent removal for one contaminant is the goal, or the permit limit is 85%. We're normally like 98%, so we're well above, like our nitrogen removal. It's 118 pounds of loading, and we're typically half of that. So we do well, but you always kind of have to keep your eyes open because we perform so well, even with Rand Whitney's loading. They could change the effluent quality standards. I want to remind the commission, our influent is the most unique of any plant in the state of Connecticut. There's no other plant that has the loading that we do of contamination. And the fact that we can go high 90% removal is kind of amazing. Still trying to figure out how that happens. Superbugs, I guess. But I'm sorry, excuse me.
No, that's great. Yeah, there are some differences in this permit renewal. They do have there's a whole section of appendices that you have to go through. There's some sampling that's required, but it is a lot of data collection, going and reviewing that data, and providing that with the report. So, but there's some new things in this upcoming permit renewal that we haven't seen in the past. So it's going to take a little bit of a review to understand that, and have to work with Derek with some of the sampling that's required.
Any questions for the engineer?
Where is the worst of the contaminants coming from? Is that from Rand Whitney?
Definitely. The influent is broken down to thirds, and a third comes from the town proper, a third comes from the casino, and a third comes from Rand Whitney. The town proper is the lightest loading to our plant, and then next comes the casino, and by far the most organic loading that we have is from Rand Whitney. The Rand Whitney loading is mostly carbon, and the town proper and the casino kind of balance that out. It's kind of like a yin-yang relationship. Without the casino and without the town, we would definitely not be able to treat Rand Whitney's carbon, but we are. So.
Now, is there any chance that they could add any more stuff to this permit as far as different chemicals removal, like pharmaceuticals or anything out of the stuff coming in? I mean, there's been talk about some of that stuff in there.
That's a good point. Yeah. Generally, they start with monitoring. So, like, they did a big study in the state, nationwide, for PFAS, one of these forever chemicals. And they may ask us to monitor that, but there won't be a standard. So.
I understand they just came up with a standardized test for PFAS, though. That will be issued, and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
It affects the water side of things just as much as it affects the wastewater. So
it's in everything.
Everything. It's in all of us right now. Don't be scared.
Else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Good.
All right. I guess the third thing I was here to talk about was the anaerobic digester. There was some discussion about this a couple months ago, maybe 3 months ago. What I wanted to do here is save some time and some money and kind of piggyback on a study that we are doing up in Lowell, Massachusetts. We have a group of people there, a process group, that did a similar study, much more in-depth study of the feasibility study of an anaerobic digester up there. Quite a bit larger plant. This plant at Montville is about 7,000 pounds per day of thickened sludge. That plant's about 50,000 pounds per day. But we wanted to use that information to kind of do a cursory evaluation of the Montville plant and see if it made any sense. We did put together a memorandum, which I can provide to you guys. Okay, you got it. You will notice there is a mistake in there, and I'll kind of highlight that. But so in general, we're looking at around $700,000 for Montville to haul and dispose of sludge, thickened sludge at the MDC. If the anaerobic, based on the information from Lowell, we're seeing about a 40. We're estimating about a 45%. You can see about a 45% reduction in sludge requirement for disposal, offsite disposal. Let's just call it 50%. So you would save approximately $350,000 around that. I think your numbers might be a little bit higher. So I'm going to say you're anywhere between $700,000 to $1 million. To treat your sludge, dispose of your sludge off site now. So you're going to save half of that, anywhere between $350,000 to $500,000 a year. So based on the information from the Lowell study, we did some extrapolation, and we're estimating that an anaerobic digester at the Montville facility could cost around $15 million. So that's over, if you're financing that over a 20-year period, that's almost $1 million a year. So you're comparing that to a savings of anywhere between $350,000 to $500,000 to on not treating that sludge. So it's a long return on investment, the bottom line is. So you're looking at least 30 to 40 years in terms of return on investment. So that's kind of the bottom line from where the memorandum is.
That's even but, using the old tank.
We couldn't even use the old tank. So it's not big enough, and it's not set up to do that. So you would have to do a whole new structure.
Are there any grants for this work to be done?
We can look into that. I'd be curious to see if we did anything with the Lowell facility.
Because it would seem to me that if we're able to reduce the amount of solid waste we have, that would be a huge benefit to the burner. So you would think there's something along the way. Be something.
Yeah. It'd have to be a pretty big grant.
Yeah, it'd have to be pretty large.
I'm saying instead of going to a 40-year return on investment, if we can shave it to 30.
So in general, you're almost, in terms of the amount of sludge that you're taking off site, you might be saving half, a little under half of that. So on a dollar basis, you could be saving, like I said, around $400,000 a year.
And
with the anaerobic digester, but you're spending almost $1 million a year in terms of.
Didn't you say there was an increase in cost coming for trucking and disposal?
I think Commissioner Lather makes a good point is for a couple reasons, and I just want to back up a little bit, is the reason we're chasing this is it's our second highest cost. We have energy, solids handling, then labor. When we did our in-house experiment, kind of off the rails, off the
anaerobic
diet. Right. Well, we did aerobic testing, and it was successful. So there's a huge cost associated with solids handling and disposal. We have to truck it up to Hartford and have them burn it. And I know because of PFAS, and there is this overwhelming. They're getting overwhelmed up there. In Hartford, the incinerator up there is kind of paring back. And so you make a good point is it would be advantageous not only for us, but the state would like to see the volumes go down because of PFAS and just the carbon footprint. You're burning, you're trucking. So maybe that does, maybe that's something we look into. Because it's just obscene to spend that much money on.
What about aerobic digester?
Yeah, well, sir, Derek was going to, we've done some sort of preliminary studies of that. We have, all the SBR tanks. It's the facility can run with one or maybe even at times two of the SBR tanks down. So it's easy to sort of take one of those tanks and run it like an aerobic digester and sort of take the data and see if that, provides any benefit. And we have seen that in the past.
And we did that experiment at the plant, and we extrapolated a 40% reduction. But you have to get approval from the state, obviously an engineering study. they won't even let you talk to them unless you go up there with, you know, all kinds of studies done. Because they approved our treatment with six SBRs. If all of a sudden I just say, hey, we're only going to use five, they would take enforcement action on us. Even though we could prove that we could use five.
And it's very easy and very quick to restore that SBR back into its normal process. But to me, that's a much more viable option compared to the anaerobic digester, a much less costly option. It would take possibly be able to use the tanks, the empty tanks that are existing now.
They represent 300,000 gallons in capacity. So as far as an aerobic treatment, I think they might be more of a viable option, whereas the anaerobic is you need the big silos.
Yeah, quite a bit of equipment.
What is the price between the two? Have we not looked at the aerobic one?
I haven't looked at the price of that, but it's far less expensive. So if you're getting a similar benefit in terms of the sludge reduction,
I was going to say,
it sort of makes more
sense. We're both talking 40% on both cases. Yeah. To me, that...
What do you use those two tanks for normally?
One is an overflow tank for a waste sludge, and the other one is like a terrarium. Somehow there's a snapping turtle in there. I don't know how it got in there. And Jim Lamb feeds it. So it's
going
to be turned into a dinosaur pretty soon. But long story short is none of those tanks have existing piping that would allow us to pipe to them. So there's significant retrofitting involved.
Far less than
the $15 million.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
So could you come back with a similar study or look-see at aerobic digester?
Yes.
Because that seems like, you know, for our case, that'd be a much more viable option.
I agree.
Yeah. We need to have a decent return on investment. And if we can get rid of half of our waste without having to truck it, that'd be a significant cost reduction for us. And that, you know, if we can work in, so that cost reduction ends up paying for the aerobic digester over a definite period of time, that would be great.
And what a fantastic thing. We have someone starting in 1 week to research and write grants. And he can research if either one of them has any grants out there for either one that may assist us with this project. What great timing for him.
I agree.
Well, what would you do with the permit, though, as far as taking a tank out of the thing? Is there any way around that?
We'd have to do an engineering study to show that if we took one of the SBRs offline, that we could still process the existing wastewater with those five. But it would be they'd be more apt to approve existing artifact tanks.
Correct.
That
retrofitting.
So you keep the six online, and now you have an additional storage that you can use for the aerobic digestion.
Right.
I think they would like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're not using them now. So.
And I think Commissioner Lathrop has a good point. It's like, it's a no-brainer. You'd think they'd want to throw money at that.
Correct. You know?
Grants.
Yeah.
Save from sludge hauling, save from taking away capacity from the incinerator.
And Hartford is rapidly having a problem with their ability to burn it all. And it's just going to get worse. This would be a major
the road.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been up there. I mean, they got the trucks all lined up. It's crazy.
They got the poop patrol up there.
That's right. Well, thank you, Thurlin. Appreciate it.
Any other questions for the engineer?
I don't have a question specifically for him, but in regards to what you're saying for the grants at Hartford, they're overloaded, and we go to them with a proposal saying, hey, we want to do this anaerobic thing and it's cost this much. Is that in itself a grant, or can they just...
No. There's a separate process to get in the grant.
Okay, but can we just go to them and say, hey, we're thinking of doing this, and can you shoot us some money? I don't know what the terminology, if it's not... there's like a specific grant, or just, hey, we're going to try to do this. Can you help us out?
I almost think the incinerator would not want to help us with reducing it because that would mean less income for them.
Less income for them.
So.
Well, you were saying that Hartford, though,
Well, so the plant that burns it is not where you go for grants.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I understand that. But I'm saying if we went to Hartford and we're like, hey, we're trying to do this.
See, I think they'd be opposed to it because that's less income for them, would be my business.
Do you mean the regulatory body, or do you?
Yeah, the plant itself.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, like you're talking like going to the Capitol. And
yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's where I'm thinking you'd pick up some grants for this.
Not going to the burn plant.
No. Yeah, but I'm saying, right. You're saying that's getting overloaded. Hartford's all about, you know, reducing carbon and all that.
Yeah.
If we just floated this idea, maybe they'd be receptive to it.
Yeah.
You know.
About a year ago, I reached out to Carlos Escalera about this, and he said, I can't really speak to you without an engineering report.
Yeah. So you can check that out for us?
Yeah, if you go into the state or federal programs and see if there's eligibility, and kind of wording it so that, you know, you're trying to reduce the environmental impact, environmental risk, and all that, that would, you know, hopefully open up some.
And the more we can handle our stuff in-house, the better off we are and the state.
Disposal, the burn cost is one thing, but don't we have a trucking fee that might be going up also?
Yeah, the trucking fees are going up. Anytime there's any type of, because it's in the contract, if there's any change for fuel, it's immediately put on. I mean, it's disgusting how much we have to pay. It makes me sick. Because we don't get anything out of it. It's just a huge cost. So it's better, that money is better spent on infrastructure or, you know, other things. And we can do it. I think, you know, it's not, it works. We've proven, you know, that it will reduce the number of tons of solids. And we're not talking chump change. This is like $10,000, $15,000 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge money. So, you know, it's something definitely to explore.
Yeah, I agree with you about the anaerobic digester being probably not feasible for town our side.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, you don't get the economy of scale of the larger facilities. I think on the Lowell facility, we're sort of at that, almost at that break-even point where it might make sense, but that facility is quite a bit larger.
Yeah.
Smaller facilities, the cost just doesn't.
But the aerobic digester sounds like it'd be a good fit.
Yeah. Does, and I've just talked to a couple of the vendors recently, and Sardar from Fleet is opened up discussion about just that just recently. It's like, yeah, we're looking to do that in Moffitt, so maybe it's something that he can come in and do a quick seminar with you, but
yeah,
we'll be talking to him as well.
Another positive with aerobic is there's really minimal odors, where the anaerobic will definitely odors could be an issue, so. And it's much safer.
Yep, much safer, much simpler.
Overall. When do you think you could come back to us with something like this?
I'll be talking to our process guy, Doug Hankins, who helped develop this memorandum. I can try to do it for the next meeting.
That would
I'll
be wonderful.
The schedule, but I'll let Derek know.
And we could share our data with you as well.
Yeah, we'll have to find out what, you know, based on the volume that we have available, it's possible we could put in another tank. That's a possibility as well, but based on the volume that we have available now with the two circular tanks that are empty, we should be able to kind of get an estimate of how much sludge that you would save from hauling and disposal.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thurlin.
Okay. Item M, new business. To consider an act on the election of a WPCA vice chairman. Okay.
Do we have any more reports from the engineers?
That was what we just had.
There's no more? Oh, we got to, where's the water? Oh, that's, I'm sorry.
It's underwater.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right. We've been without a vice chair since the election. Al was the vice chair, and he did not win his re-election, so we lost him from the commission, so we need a new vice chair. Would anyone like to take that position? There is the responsibility of the vice chair is basically, well, you will take over from the chair when the chair is not available, which 99% of the time is just to run the meeting.
Kevin?
I would have interest in that if the rest of the commissioners would.
Would you like to do that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would anyone like to nominate Kevin?
I nominate Kevin.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All right. Are there any other nominations? Second call, any other nominations? Third call, any other nominations? Nominations are closed. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Lightfoot?
Well, I would like to abstain, but I think I have to vote, right?
I don't know. We got enough people?
Go ahead and vote for yourself.
I vote for myself. I vote for myself.
Commissioner Longden?
Favor.
Commissioner Perdue?
Favor.
Commissioner Bissell?
Favor.
Motion carries. Thank you, Kevin. You are the new vice chair.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Item N, reports and referrals from planning and zoning. That would be my job, but I was not able to make the last meeting because I was in Hartford, so I couldn't make the meeting. So I didn't see the minutes from that meeting online, so I have no report.
If I could step in on that, not sure. So much from planning and zoning, but there's been two great presentations recently that came up that Lenny was at also. One of them was to the town council about the growth of the town, and they did like a national study as to what is happening nationally for businesses, what types of businesses, and they kind of were touching upon what would work in our area through that research. The second one was given to the Economic Development Committee, and it kind of talked about, you know, it brought up like the where, you know, they touched on like the more local stuff, like where do you want to go, how do you want to go, like, and working our steps through that. And I think Lenny shared my sentiments on that there were not nearly as many people there as we would have hoped for. And they were both really good meetings, and both times, both meetings, wastewater and drinking water were brought up for that. So we are a key thing in the development of business in the town, whether it be, you know, housing or, you know, commercial space. They both need those things. So we are a key factor for a lot of that stuff.
Okay. May I add, just, you know, from the permits that we've received, we have met with engineers regarding Oxaboxa Lofts, which is on Pink Row. It's a 72-unit apartment building. Village Apartments, I think it's 108 new units, two or three more buildings. A grocery store, a gas station, another residential, multifamily residential development along Route 32. So in a selfish sense, these all represent very nice connection fees. It's hard sometimes to explain to the developers that they're paying for like a co-op, they're joining a club, they're paying in arrears, they're paying for the infrastructure that's already put in and the expenses of that. But our connection fees are still, when compared to other towns, surrounding towns, are quite inexpensive. And our rates are very inexpensive compared to the national average and surrounding towns.
Where are those developments? You got gas stations way down there by Bedergo.
Right? Yep. And
Bridges, is that across the street here?
The what?
Village Apartments?
Village Apartments is,
right over here.
Yeah, they're going to add, it's kind of a double whammy. Well, it's a triple whammy. We're going to get connection fees based on the number of units for sewer and the size of the meter for water. And then we're going to get rid of that pesky, whatever the word is, pump station there that always jams up on us, because they're going to get rid of that. It's going to be a gravity drain. And then what was the third thing? I forget. But anyway, we're very positive about that.
You said a grocery store?
Yeah, I'm not at liberty to say anymore. I just...
That was a teaser.
But there's rumors of a grocery store.
We could talk about rumors. Would the grocery store go in an existing...
No.
No, all brand new.
All brand new.
Okay.
And then the two residential... you know, 303 and 245, right across from the town hall entrance, essentially.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of scuttlebutt about a grocery store.
Okay. Anything else to add?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you guys for stepping in there. Okay. Moving on to Section 2, the Water Commission. Report from engineers.
I'd like to welcome, this is the superintendent, I'd like to welcome Marius Juzikowski. Marius is also with Wright Pierce. He is an engineer specific to the water side of things. He's a professional engineer that we consult with quite often. Anything from when we had that line break last spring to, you know, when we had that initial light fire and we had such a pressure variance. He helped us talk about ways to improve that. He was instrumental in helping design the water tower for the replacement water tower, and specifically led the way in not only making it a water tower, but essentially a treatment tank that has the ability to mix the water and thus reduce accumulating you know, contamination that is consistent with normal water supplies. So Marius is here to talk to us about initially the rate increase, the proposal for that rate increase, the water system line extension potentials, one associated with the light iron storage yard that has had two fires in the last 3 years, and then the potential for grants and where they apply in the extension of water. Remember, the sewer's about 5,000 connections and the water's about 500. So sewer and water are very different. Sewer is, we routinely are very much in the black and we contribute to our general fund. I think annually sewer's shown about a 7% increase in revenues, primarily because of the casino, Rand Whitney, and the septage receiving, whereas water is more as a service to the town and we break even. Even though 6 months into this fiscal year, we are showing a, you know, that we're ahead, we're in the black. It's never been anywhere near the amount of money that we make for sewer. So without further ado.
Again, hello, my name is Marius Juzikowski. I'm the Senior Project Manager with Wright Pierce. So I'd like to talk to you about the first project is actually the map over here.
Do you want me to hold that?
That's okay. I can do this here. I can put it up here.
Oh, there you go.
Is that the system?
Make sure the microphone works here. So this is something that we discussed a couple years ago. I think the commission knows there were two fires at the York Metal Scrap Facility located on Maple Avenue right here. So at the time when they had those fires, there was really a big concern from the residents. There was a lot of smoke in town, and really they don't have a good fire protection there. So what they've been using in the past, they've been using dry fire hydrants, and basically those hydrants are connected to existing ponds, you know, where they store water, potential fire protection. At the time of the fires, they were actually, the hydrants were far away, and I think there was, you know, those ponds were depleted, there really wasn't enough water. So I think it really took them a long time, you know, to fight the fire. It, you know, the fire generated a lot of smoke in the area. You know, there was some environmental concerns. So at that time, I think it was 2022, the owners of that property approached the town and the WPCA and asked for the water main, to basically evaluate the water main extension to provide public water to help with, you know, fighting the fires in that facility. So at that time, up with a couple different options here, and you can see them on the drawing here. So the first option was basically connecting to existing water line on Maple Avenue. Basically, you run a an 8-inch line on Emma Lane. So basically, that's the red line to run it to there. And I think at that point, you know, they would, you know, install hydrants to the fire department to connect those hydrants with fire hoses. And, you know, be able to fight the fire. So that's one option. So that option is about 870 feet of water main. And based on the estimate, you know, if you estimate about $400 a foot, you know, if you wanted to run, that's about $350,000 that, you know, the 800 feet of water main would cost. So that was one option. You know, by doing this option, you're basically providing the water a little bit closer to the facility, but you're not still getting all the water, you know, what they need. The second option that we evaluated was this blue line, which really connecting to an existing water line on Maple Avenue and installing approximately 3,200 feet of new water main and connect here on Pequot Road. So that water main will actually provide, you know, the water a lot closer to the facility. It's a longer one. So that will provide them with a benefit. And also that would help with maybe closing the loop of the water main. So right now, you know, the water can only flow in one direction. There's a dead end line over here, and there's a dead end. So there's really a big dead end that, you know, you don't have any connections there. You know, by providing the loop, you're going to provide some redundancy and also provide some additional fire flow to that, to the property. Running that 3,200 feet will be probably around $1.4 million. So very, very expensive. My understanding is since the fires occurred in 2022, they made some improvements to their system. So they've installed some additional hydrants. They've improved the ponds. I mean, Derek, we need to have more details on that, but I believe they've done some improvements to the existing infrastructure. And really, they reached out to the town first because we were hoping they were going to contribute to pay for the water main extension if it's going to help them with the fire flow. We had a meeting. I think the chairman was participating in that meeting. We had a meeting. We presented the costs, and it kind of died out. They never came back to kind of offer up the money. We told them what the cost might be. They never came back to really offer up the cost of main improvements. So, you know, I think extending the water line would help, but also could create problems for the water system because you're going to be, there's really not many customers on this line. There's only maybe 16 homes there. So, you know, there's not going to be a lot of usage. So you're going to be adding a lot of water main where the water main is going to be sitting still and, you know, getting cold. So even though, you know, you would get a benefit of maybe closing the loop so if there was a water main break, you have a lot of way of the water to get into those residents. So that will be the only benefit. But you're also going to be creating, you know, additional storage in the water main because there's really not a lot of customers.
I just want to add a couple of points. Marius has made a good point with the loop is extremely important with water flow because when you have dead ends, you have this buildup of this trihalomethanes. It's when organic matter in the line mixes with chlorine byproducts, and it's something we have to fight. And we flush for a lot of reasons. One, to get rid of sediment, but in the summer we flush to primarily get rid of that. Cook Water Tower is actually going to have a mixing and venting machinery to prevent this buildup of these chemicals. The other thing is to keep in mind to lay a linear foot of water. It's $400 per linear foot. The light iron facility improved their fire response by putting in better draft tubes. They had a containment area for recycling the water from the fire application, and they were able to put the fire out the second time. But that first fire was scary. It was a huge, huge draw on our system. Again, compliments to John Lilly and Kevin Loyler that managed the pumping of that system so that the firemen could respond appropriately. But that's why this all came up is, you know, is this going to be a routine thing where we have light iron fires every, we had two in 1 year, I think. So, and then we looked at how many houses would actually support this huge cost. And it was millions. It was, I think,
so the red line is option A, and
yes,
and the blue line is option B. Now, on option A, there are no water users, correct?
Correct.
But option B, we would have residential customers.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, now it's my understanding that if we do option A, the entire cost is on us. If we do option B, however, there are grants from the state because we're providing residential water.
Right, that could be grants available. We have to apply for the grants.
One and two.
We have to apply for the grants from the state, and we have to demonstrate they need.
Oh, okay.
And depending on the rating from the state, you're going to get so many points for the project.
Option one.
It's different for the project. So we can apply for the grant, but we can't guarantee how much money the amount is going to get. So before you apply, because you have to demonstrate there's a need, I think the state would like, you know, there's going to be a backup redundancy that in case there's a water main break, you have another way of water to get in there, going to provide to the residents. So I think, you know, we don't know, we have to apply and demonstrate the need to the state and they grant the projects and based on many points, you know, the amount we get, then you know how much grant money you
would
receive.
But that is a potential benefit.
It's option one.
Option one, yes.
Right. Option one is the one with the residential customers. And that will provide a better water system because it loops.
Loops, right.
So that improves the quality of the system. It provides water for potential fires, which I think we're going to continue to see those fires because most of them turn out to be lithium batteries that cause those fires.
Really?
Yeah.
I talked to them about it. I ran into them one day, and they said a lot of it's like the little scooters, you know, the Segway type things. The people throw them away, scrap metal, and then they sit in there. The battery sparks out against something, and there's plastic around it, and then boom, it's off. So they were expressing concern, you know, moving forward. My question for this was, when we had the fires, you had manifolds set up at different places for the fire department to fill up. We would still have that same issue even with a fire hydrant close by the fire department. That wouldn't fulfill all the fire department's needs, correct?
Right.
So they'd still be filling up at various locations to get the water there.
Yes.
Well, those lithium ion batteries, you can't put them out with water.
It takes a lot of water to put them out.
It takes like 17 times as much water as it does a regular fire.
They burn at like 1,200 degrees or something. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally burn right into the asphalt.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, maybe the future benefit, you know, you can see right away the facility over here. So right now we're recycling water. So if there's a future, you know, I read some news about cardboard boxes. There was a shortage of cardboard boxes. So if they were to expand their, you know, productions and maybe need to buy water, you know, right now we pretty much going up to the property, you know, so if they need more water, that would also help in the future that will, because you're going to have less, you know, less.
All right, that would be something that we would make a point of letting them know that potential existed.
And oddly enough, Rand Whitney does not make cardboard boxes. They make the corrugated that goes. They make the corrugated that goes in between.
So
whole plant just to make
this exact. Option one actually runs right through DW, right? Was it right,
yes.
Right through the road?
Yes.
And how much was that?
That was $1.4 million.
$1.4 million.
About $400,000 for roughly, you know.
What would we have to provide to the state to start the process of seeing if there were a grant?
So there's an application process. So we would help file an application, and typically what they need is they just need a project information. We would need to fill out a sheet like what does they need, you know. It's a pretty straightforward process. You know, this is very similar when we file for the Coke Hill Tank Tower. We have to file initial applications, you know, we put show the boxes, describe the project, they evaluate it, they might call us with some questions, and then they basically rank it. So it's, you know, pretty straight, and, you know, it's not really very involved. And they want to see the map, so we want to show them this map with, you know, this part going in here.
I'm of the opinion that we have to do something. To leave the situation just as it is inviting tragedy, because I think we're going to continue to see fires. So my preference would be to take the route that potentially could give us state funding. But personally, what I would like to do is
is go that route with option two as a backup in case funding is denied. And then we can figure out a way to pay for it if that happens.
Sounds like a rate increase to me.
I think we need to, you know, have that conversation with DW again. I mean, first of all, we had a really rainy winter, so that probably helped them out a little bit. But you get in the summertime, you get that long, dry spell of heat, they're going to have these problems again, and, you know, they need to be as proactive as we are about this.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, it's certainly not good for their reputation to have fires there, and certainly not their business, because that's an entire day that they're spending doing that instead of processing.
You know, another thing that I don't understand here is that I thought when these guys needed water to fight that fire, they had to go to 32. But I'm looking at these mains, and they run right down Maple Avenue. Why weren't we?
Because there wasn't enough water flow, because it was dropping the water pressure to water customers. So Derek had the guys putting in manifolds down along 32 in different locations so that water pressure didn't drop to our regular customers.
They would fill up, and then they have to gun it to get up to
So what I'm saying is this going to still have a problem with water being pulled out of there?
That's what I was saying before, is that even with that, that would be good for small fires in short term, but we would still have manifolds along 32 during an emergency on top of that. So that's not going to fill.
So this isn't really going to correct the whole problem?
Not the whole problem, no.
It's not.
It's going to make
it. It's got to put some Band-Aids on it when... I mean, the problem is that when they have a fire, they require so much water to put that out that you'd have a huge main going there, and then you have so much, like he's saying, that stagnant water because you're not going to have enough draw off it.
Just to interject, I apologize, but I got to leave to go to work.
Yes,
you know, I didn't realize the meeting was going to go so long. I'm trying to
fit
this in. You know.
Right. Thanks for coming tonight. It was great to see you.
Thank you. Are you going to keep coming?
I'm going to try to make it. Eventually, I should be back on a regular shift.
Okay.
This ain't an issue. But at least for the next couple months, I'm going to be.
Even if you could just come?
Yeah.
And then leave.
Okay. All right.
That'd be great. Good to see you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was good to see you.
Yeah.
Have a good night. Don't work too hard.
Yeah.
The.
Good night. Be safe.
Thanks.
Okay. And Frank left at 7:30.
So I guess if I can mention something. So I think the water volume limitation, it's really the Maple Avenue pump station. Because that's the only feed in this area is the pump station. So the pumps, if they have three pumps, I think the maximum flow is 2,000 gallons a minute from those pumps. You know, you don't have a storage tank in here, right? Normally the fire flow comes from a storage tank. But here, you know, the pump station, so the pumps are only rated for so much. So, you know, but again, if you have the loop, you could reduce the headless, you could probably get more flow because now the water can go around in here, not just one pipe, it can go two pipes, so there's maybe less friction. You know, you could probably provide higher pressure so you don't limit how much you're dropping the pressures in the area.
Right. Now, one of the things that's on my radar is to extend the water to as much as we can in town for the economic development. Because without water and sewer, there is no economic development. So that's on my radar to do that, and every little bit helps. If we do that, then that opens up the possibility of moving up to
over here.
Yeah.
Right now, we this is a superintendent. We are we can recycle up to 60% of our effluent. Our typical effluent is 2.1 million gallons. So 60% of that is like 1.2, but we're less than that. It's like 45%. So we send them about 700,000 gallons a day of recycled water. So if suddenly they started really demanding potable water at that level, that would be pretty significant billing. So. In the interest of it being 7:30, and he has two other things to talk about.
Are there any questions?
I just want to, before we continue, I did review the budget, like I indicated, and we are in the black. We are in the black for the water supply. Cook Water Tower right now is from Sakaki and Son. There's a new project manager. And the timeline has shifted a little bit, but August of this year, we're anticipating that the tank is online. And final completion is in September. We have a ribbon cutting coming up in March. It's going to be adjacent to the signage. And Verizon has reached out to me and asked to buy space on the old water tower for their antennae. And the potential there is that it could be a revenue stream. With the connections to the water supply, we have to pay money back to the tribe. We have a repayment contract with them related to a certain, you know, there's amateurs. It's not a true amortization, but the original, originally the tribe supported the infrastructure, the construction of all the water pipes and everything. And it was like $5 million, and we paid initially like $3 million, and we were left, we still owed them like $2 million. Now that's down to about $600,000. And every time we have a water connection, we pay some more money towards that principal. It's not a true amortization. It's just based on whenever we have a connection. And so as we have development in town, we whittle away at that $600,000 that we owe the tribe. And then jumping back into the next, we talked about grants, the extension, and now we're going to talk about the rate increase proposal from Wright Pierce. And I just want to provide some background information.
We do that, why don't we just go through here. Item B, there is no old business.
Okay.
Item C would be new business to consider an act on the proposed rate study. So let's go ahead and speak.
I'm sorry.
Well,
can I provide?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just give you a little bit of background information. Jumping back to sewer, our sewer rates are less than half of the national average. There would be considered a third of Norwich's MPU. So sewer is definitely, for sewer utility that makes as much money as we do and having the rates that we do, it's pretty incredible. But now jumping to water, we're a third the national average. So our average is bill is $45 a quarter. For comparison, squaw is $120 a quarter. So we've had some hits during COVID, during the water loss. We've had three Groton utility rate increases that we have absorbed and still managed to stay in the black. We have a construction project, Cook Water Tower, and we want this, a normal process, to look at a study for the ratepayers that shows us that we are appropriately pricing our utility, our water supply. And with that,
thank you very much, Mr. Albertson. So we provided our proposal back in December, and I know that the commission had some questions. So I was hoping that Jess Richard will be here today. She's actually sick with a stomach bug, but she could join us, you know, on the phone so I can connect her in, because I need her to really go through the proposal and talk to you about the rate study, you know, that we provided. So I'm going to call her right now, if you don't mind. I'm sorry she couldn't be here. She just didn't want to get you guys all sick. So.
So she's like an expert on rate reviews, and she is somebody that Wright Pierce uses for, you know, if you're getting ready to do a rate study.
Hello, this is Jessica Richard.
Hello, Jess, it's Marius. I don't know if everybody can hear me. Can you hear Jess? Or no, is the microphone not working, maybe? 1, 2, 3.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think we can hear you.
Yes. Okay. Should I put the phone on the podium there? Is that okay next to
me? Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry about that. So.
No, this is great. Hi, Jess. You're here at the town chambers in Montville, Connecticut. I'll let the mayor is here, Mayor Brunel. Mm-hmm. We have Gloria, who is the secretary, Gloria Gathers. And then I'll let the chairman introduce himself and other members.
My name is Chuck Longton. I'm the chair of the commission. Rich Gladue is to my left. Kevin Lathrop is to my right. And, of course, the superintendent, Derek Allison.
Can you hear us okay?
For 23 years now, almost 24. So nice to meet you all.
Thank you. Jess, we gave kind of an intro to where we stand, the proposal, the rates as compared to the national average, you know, that we've absorbed three rate increases from Groton Utilities, that we had a water loss, and we have a construction project to support. Cook Water Tower is a $2.6 million project. We've received a grant for $1.3 million, and then we're going to amortize that remaining $1.3 million over 20 years at 2%. And in order to support that amortization, we're probably going to have a rate increase, and also to support the normal functioning of the utility.
Oh, Jess,
okay, sorry, you just broke up a little bit.
Oh, okay. Basically, we're just would like your take on, you know, increasing the potential to increase the rates. What's involved in the study? The concern I have as the superintendent is, do we have enough money coming in from the ratepayers to support not only Cook Water Tower, but the infrastructure for the water supply?
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So I'll just give you a quick overview of what the rate study is, and then the goals of the rate study, and then our approach and our process. So just to start, the goal of a rate study, or really what a rate study is, it's to develop an accurate projection of your water cost of service. That includes the operating costs of running your utility. If you did have any existing debt service obligations, those obligations, and look at any new debt service that you'll be taking on, and then capital costs needed in the system. And then what we do is we recommend water rates sufficient to ensure the utility's long-term fiscal sustainability and understand the practical impacts on the customers. So the goal is really revenue stability, revenue sufficiency, and equitable distribution of the cost to the users. You want to maintain adequate reserves. Your rates, you want them to be easy to understand and administer. You also want to make sure that they're affordable and legally defensible. So, and then our approach is going to be, we would review your current historical operating financials, review the historic and projected future build consumption trends, look back, maybe you had some new users into the system or you've lost a significant user, evaluate the community-specific business considerations, which is always very important, develop a defensible projection of the future costs. Those are your operational components and your capital components. And then what we do is we complete a cost of service study. We would evaluate your existing rate schedule or your rate model, and then we would develop different rate structures and then project the future performance of those rate structures. And then it would be a five-year projection of the utility's expenses and revenues at the proposed rates to meet your needs. And then we would benchmark you against other communities of similar size to make sure your rates are in line with them.
Okay.
Does anyone have any questions?
I just this is the superintendent. I just want to add, we haven't had a water rate increase in 11 years, which I forgot to mention earlier, but that, in a sense, is, you know, on one hand you can say, oh, well, you haven't raised the rates in 11 years, but on the other hand, is that a responsible way to govern the utility? You know, it's do we have enough? We're very lucky, it's a young, tight system, but, you know, my concern is I think the rate study should be done, and I think we need to look at these things that you've brought up. because they're readily available. I could, you know, easily provide all that information to you.
Okay, great, thanks. I did not realize it was 13 years. Thank you for clarifying that.
Actually, 11.
Oh, 11.
11. And I was going to ask, could you send out an email with a breakdown of how you're going to be analyzing all this? Because it's a little bit hard to hear you.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I can send that out later tonight or first thing tomorrow if that works.
Derek, you can share that with us.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you, Jess.
Yeah, my question is just it's sometimes a little bit hard to hear you through everything. So
I apologize. I was not feeling well, so I'm not able to make it.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for her?
Well, I just thought it was quite a bit of money for the small system we have. So I wasn't sure exactly what was going to be in this breakdown of the rate increase.
I did the math. It comes down to $44 per connection, which is one quarter, right? Because how much we charge a quarter, $45?
Yeah, $45.
$45. So one entire quarter of water connection is going to go towards this study.
And part of this study, maybe, I mean, we're looking for future growth, too, as far as maybe putting some more spurs out besides the one we got. I mean, would that be added into this study as well? I mean, we're just talking about this one going over here, but you might want to bring some more.
She addressed
some of the other neighborhoods.
Trending growth and expansion was addressed in there. So.
So that'll be part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would all be part of the rate study.
One of the things we've looked at is what is it, the DOEC, the Department of Economic, DODCD, or DOED, Department of Economic Development, because they have, I think, a matrix or a coefficient for towns at the state level where they kind of make a projection for that town. They each region of the state, and then they make what is expected. And we do have draws. I mean, Rand Whitney is the single largest tax outside of Eversource. They're the biggest tax. They're going like gangbusters. They're hiring people. The casino is a big draw. It's relatively affordable housing. EB is hiring what do they have, walk-in Wednesdays? You can literally walk in there without a resume and get a job that, pays well. So there's no reason Montville can't, go further.
Well, I was going to say, I think we're done with her part for now, right? So I think we're set to end the phone call with her. We have a discussion we can have.
Right, she's going to send out an email to the layout.
Yes, that's what I was requesting. She'll send it to Derek, and Derek will share it with all of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jess, thank you very much. This was very helpful. I appreciate you taking the time.
Hope you feel better.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for understanding with the phone, but just we wanted to speak to you about it today.
I don't know who moved it near the microphone.
That was Chuck.
Good idea.
Yeah.
It worked pretty good.
Yeah. He's up to date on all the technology.
Yeah. That was a good move.
Right.
Yeah, but bottom line is on the agenda. I would like to propose that I'm not an acting member of the commission here, but we did bring this up before, and you wanted more information for a vote, and that's why Marius was here and why Jess was on the phone. But it's
we're still in the black as a water supplier.
Right, so what
we're not in the red.
What we should do then is to make the motion, have it seconded, and then we open for discussion. So it's part of it.
Okay. So, yes, sir.
Rick, would you?
I'll make the motion.
Please read the motion.
To consider the act on the proposed rate study for the Montville Water Supply, the Town of Montville Water and Sewer Commission hereby resolves to consider it. An act on a motion for the appropriation of $22,000 for the rate study cited by Wright and Pierce, WPCA engineers, in their December 6th, 2023 proposal. Motion, discussion.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
I was just going to say, we're still in the black as a water supplier.
Yes.
Which we are limited as to how far we can go that way, correct? Because we are supplying a necessity, correct?
Correct.
So I guess my question is if we're in the black, we're sustaining and...
Where's the ceiling?
And then the Cook Hill Water Tower, how much of a burden is that going to put on our monthly, yearly payment? Is that going to fall within that black range, or is that going to put us in a red range?
Right now, we have operational funds coming in primarily from the ratepayers, and then we have connection fees that you know, that add some of that, and permit fees and things like that. And then we have a like savings account called a reserve fund, and there's roughly $800,000 in that. That will slowly dry up if we're using that money to support the bill for the Cook Water Tower.
Okay.
One of the unknowns about Cook Water Tower is that there's been a discussion about a subsidy. In addition to the $1.3 million grant, there's been some discussion about additional funds being floated towards the Montville WPCA to pay off that Cook Water Tower, but nothing's been put in stone.
And also, the leasing it out to Verizon would generate X amount per month.
Right, and I haven't explored that enough.
You got maintenance on that other tower up there then, too. I mean, you can't just start throwing things up there without keeping that.
And actually, that was a cautionary tale that another water supply told me is, like, be careful there because sometimes they damage the tower and there is significant maintenance.
Yeah.
Like cathodic protection and things like that. But... you know, it goes back to we're a third of the national average. If you compare us to Squaw, we're $45 compared to $120. How much farther can we go into the future like this if we have like a major break? When I say we're in the black, we're not too far in the black. You know, and I can supply those numbers to everyone, but it's been 11 years since the rate increase. When I talked to Jess earlier, there's approaches to increases where it's tiered, and one of the key here words here is equitable. You know, there are programs that would make the rates increase at a rate that the community could absorb. That's not considered aggressive. But what normally happens is a utility, there's a town not too far from here that waited too long, and then they started having infrastructure issues and they went up 40% on their water. So we don't want to do that.
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I have a couple of questions. Number one, would the result of this study include a recommended increase?
Yes,
it would. Okay. Number two, do we need an engineering study to decide upon a rate increase? Or do we have enough information on our own?
I don't think so. I don't think the ratepayer, it's prudent, it would be viewed as prudent, one, by the ratepayers. They would say, you know, where'd you come up with this money? But more importantly, when we're chasing grants, one of the things that, particularly in water supplies, is the state and the federal agencies are looking for, have you tested your rates? Are you clearly engineering your rates? Have you looked at increasing or a study of your rates to make sure they support the not only the current condition but the future? And they're not going to accept, well, you know, Derek thought $15 a quarter.
To be clear, I asked that question because it would be unwise not to ask that question.
No, and I agree. There have been, I've been and seen commissions making, you know, $15. Let's go $15. But I think the ratepayers deserve, you know, well, where did you get that number? And then again, the state or the federal agencies will say, hey, did you support this with an appropriate study?
What about the option one water main expansion? Would that, where's that money going to come from?
That, you know, that's something that can be considered.
I mean, part of the rate study, you know, we would meet with the operators, with Derek, we meet with the commission, and, you know, discuss what are the potential costs, you know, what do you need, you know, we're going to spend the money on the Cook Tower is one, we can include the water main, we can include other water main extensions, but, you know, those will be, you know, through workshops with the commission, you know, because you guys know where the needs are in the town, so we could include those costs, and then Jess will be able to run different models, and I think part of the proposal is, you know, we can provide you with a suggested rate, but we want to come in and discuss it with you. It would be like a workshop, you know, so you understand, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that water line being $1.4 million, the Cook Water Tower. We're still how far into that one?
We will have to pay $1.3.
$1.3.
And that's going to be financed at 2%?
2% over 20 years. And then there's the potential for up to $500,000 in a subsidy, which they kind of hint at, but I haven't seen the money.
Right. And if you use a random number, like he says, $15 per quarter, we have 500 connections, $15 per the 500 connections, that's $30,000 a year. And we're looking at millions, and it's not a huge number to put at that.
Well, like I said, the biggest thing I just, for the amount of money, I wanted to know what we were getting. And I wanted to know what, you know, what was going to be in the study and how far it was going to go. And that's, and it, this is where we have to go. We have to see what it's going to cost us for all these expansions down the road. And a lot of these developments around here are all on private wells. I can see down the road maybe putting spurs into at least each of these neighborhoods down the road that if some of them did have a big problem, I think they just had a break up there in the Unksville.
Oh, yeah, they had a break over the weekend, I believe.
The weekend.
Yeah. And so then there was a fire. When was the fire? There was a fire on Maple Avenue.
Friday night.
Friday night, and then the break was Saturday.
Yeah. You had back-to-back events. Now, like DW, when they have their fire, do they get a bill for their water usage?
No, they did not receive a bill for that.
Is that something we just exempt because it's a fire?
That's a good question because they used, because the first fire, they used 1 million gallons.
Well, the first one you can say, okay, it was a fire, but now they know there's a problem there. If they don't address it, isn't that negligence on their part? And well, they should be billed now?
Unfortunately, as long as they follow all the state guidelines and the town has an infrastructure for fire safety, they're following the state guidelines of what they do.
They're depending upon the municipality to provide the fire safety.
Yes. So if they don't want to chip in for it, I think that we should talk and say, you know, find out what we have to do to figure this out, that we meter whatever water they use. And I don't know, what do we charge per gallon? Or we just do a flat.
Well, it's $45 per personal. Cool. And then I could give you the breakdown for the commercial rate.
Yeah. I think we'd like double that commercial rate because they're only going to need it, hopefully never, but say once, twice a year. We double or triple that number, and we say, okay, well, when you need water, it's X amount per gallon.
Yeah, but I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can just
come. Well, if they're not going to chip in for the securement of this line to help protect their property and their assets, I mean, they, you know, they're the ones.
I know where you're going, but I think Rich is right. I don't think you can just arbitrarily do that. There are state statutes which regulate.
That's why I was here. That's why I was asking to research and see what we could do there, because
see, that'd be something I'd want to see in that report.
You know, 1 million gallons, that's
A
lot of water.
Yeah.
And a very a tremendous stress on the system. Again, compliments to John and Kevin. You know, there were too many draws on that one line. They opened too many hydrants. And the pressure was just, you know, really. And then they were shutting the hydrants very quickly. So the pressure was going quick.
You get the hammer effect.
Yeah, it was. But the second fire, I have to really commend everybody involved. They put those manifolds up, and that was amazing. That kept the pressures down.
So this rate study would give us all those answers?
Yeah, I mean, we can include, I mean, the water main extension is different, but I can work on that separately, so, yeah.
Right, because
the requirements.
Yeah, I agree that a rate adjustment is appropriate. Trying to come up with all the reasons that, you know, come up with all the costs that we have to, that we are likely to have to handle in the foreseeable future, and making sure that the ratepayer is able to cover that. And at the same time, not overcharge the ratepayer, because we're, for the water, we're not supposed to make a profit, right?
Yeah, well, the we're enterprise funds, so both sewer and water, under the generally accepted accounting principles, we're an enterprise fund, and we run it like a business with a net zero goal. So we're not supposed to really make a profit. We're really just supposed to, anything above in the black, we recycle into either the general fund or capital.
Okay.
And we do that very nicely with sewer, especially with the Rand Whitney project.
Well, like I said, I would just like to make sure that this study has everything we need in it, because we haven't done one in 11 years. I'd hate to have to go back again.
Right.
So if we're going to do it, let's make sure we have everything we know we're going to need in this study.
I think it kind of dovetails with that economic development, too. You know, I think that's a pretty normal question for somebody to say, well, hey, can our current rate structure support development? And right now, I would say it doesn't. You know, I think we've done a pretty good job because we have a young system. It's very tight.
It would be nice, but unfortunately, we don't have projections yet of where future lines would go, which is something that we should be taking up and talking about. But we don't have that in time for this study.
I would like to attend the next.
If we had that, then those future expansions could become part of it.
And maybe they could put a caveat in that study, you know.
Because there is going to be expansion. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that the rate study will include that.
And Derek talked about a few projects, even though you can't go into great detail, but you might have an idea of areas, so we can talk about expansion in those areas. And I'd like to attend planning and zoning meetings as, you know, a citizen, just to get an idea of what areas we're talking about moving into.
I mean, for a while there was...
Well, most of it's 32, isn't it?
Right now, yes.
Yeah.
But there was the data center. You know, there was discussion about a data center up near the high school, St. Bernard's, but that would be massive amounts of water.
I know, the guy died with it all the plan, so...
Well, they didn't want to pay any taxes anyhow. They didn't, you know, they wanted to use all our resources up and just pay a little bit. And for us, that's not a good thing. And it sounded like that thing that they had at the town council meeting there, where the guy came in and said how things kind of work these days, is that most people will come in. That's what they're looking for. They're looking to come into your town, build something, but don't want to pay very much. And that's really not good for a town.
No. All right, any other discussion?
I'm good.
All right, let's move on. And roll call vote, please, Gloria.
Commissioner Perdue.
Favor.
Commissioner Longton.
Favor.
Commissioner Lathrop.
Favor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
both for coming out tonight. Drive safe.
Be careful in that electric car there.
Yeah. Right, item D, executive session for personnel issues.
Stay near a water source.
That was covered.
Okay. All right, item E, remarks from the public. Are there any remarks from the public? Second call, remarks from the public. Third and final call, any remarks from the public? Hearing none, remarks from commission members. Rich.
Yes, one thing, even though these guys have left, I haven't seen a single thing happen up at that water tower. That water tower, the fence is still up, the tree's still up, nothing has moved up there. Only thing I've seen out of that project so far is a sign.
Right, they're basically shut down for the winter.
Well, you're right, but I sat there and listened to him the other last time he came on, and he said, oh, yeah, we got stuff we're going to do in February. And I'm looking at him like, are you sure? And he says, oh, yeah, we're going to. Well, yeah, well, here we are. Nothing done.
I will forward to you the minutes of the last meeting that includes the schedule. I'll send it to you.
Do they have a schedule of work on that project?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll make sure both of you guys get it, and Frank.
Okay.
The schedule's in there.
Yeah.
Remarks?
No, I'm good. I, and You know, I just want to thank everyone for the vote for making me the vice chair. That's appreciated.
But, thank you, Kevin, for accepting to be the vice chair. Congratulations to Ron for his new position. Looking forward to having him on board. I really am.
Come, go find us some money.
Well suited
for it.
Yep. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Or I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion, or the meeting is adjourned at 8:03.
But,
just the project manager quit. No, you have to say what time. So I looked on my phone. You guys can turn your phones back on now. Don't forget.
He wasn't contributing anything. And then
mine's still sitting at the house.
He didn't tell anybody that he left. And he's in a good guy.
Eating dinner, and I looked down, and I said, oh,